We are getting ready to talk about credit cards. Nick Ewan joins us, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy. And we're talking about credit card rewards. If you don't, you could be missing out on benefits to help you travel for less. We had him on for an hour last time. It's never enough time. So if y'all have any questions or comments, text them in to 504-260-1870. How you doing there, Nick?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's talk about a young person in college trying to establish credit, wants to get a credit card. Does it matter which card they get, or is it all about getting approved and establishing some credit?
Generally, it's all about getting approved and establishing credit, but the big caveat is if you are in college or just getting started, you can't view the card as just free money. So
no.
If you get extended a huge limit, one of the baby steps you could actually take even before you're in college. So if we have any parents out there, think about adding your child or your children as authorized users on your existing credit cards. Some issuers even allow you to set individual spending limits, and then that actually can help them build some additional credit, get comfortable with managing their money. You can review their spending goals, set a budget with them if they have a part-time job. And then once they are out in the world and they're applying for their own credit card, they actually will have a little bit of a credit history. And that can really go a long way towards helping them get started on the right foot.
My kid in college was solicited for a credit card offer, and the kid was at college and I was at home, and I accepted and opened a credit card and put their name on it and then paid the bill every month and just said, you know, look, this is the budget. This is what you got to stick to. But I made sure that that bill was paid right on time. And now that credit card rating that they have is about as good as mine. And he's 29. So that's another way to do it, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. And the nice thing, too, is that authorized user doesn't even have to be your family member. If you have a friend who you are maybe looking to, you know, help them boost their credit, I've actually done this before where I've added someone as an authorized user, even though they're never actually going to be using their card, but it can actually help them build that credit. And the same thing holds true with your children. A little hint, there are a couple of issuers that have no age limit on your authorized users. So believe it or not, my daughter has been an authorized user. She's 10 and a half now. She's been an authorized user on one of my credit cards for over 10 years because I added her when she was an infant. So that's going to give her a real, even though she doesn't actually have a card and is obviously not out there spending, she's building that credit history, and that can be a real boon once they are getting out and applying for their own credit.
10 and a half?
Yeah.
The Dickens, you say. I just wanted to see if we got any Beverly Hillbilly fans out there. So does she now have a credit score?
No. So since she's still underage, she does not have a credit score yet. But when she actually turns 18, that's generally when you will first have the ability to have a credit score. Oftentimes, if someone has had no credit history at that point, they will go on freecreditreport.com or go to any one of the credit bureaus, and they will essentially say not enough information because they don't have a profile on that individual if they have never been an authorized user, if they've never been associated with the line of credit. Whereas my daughter will have had an extended period of time and will potentially be in a much better position to be able to manage her credit and potentially get her own credit card and not have to go through the initial steps of having, you know, a co-signer on the account. So that's another option as well, is as a parent, you can go to a bank with your kid and you can open a credit card where you are co-signing on it, still in their name, but you are essentially saying we are assuming the responsibility for it. And then the other option, a lot of people use this if they are trying to rehab their credit, is what's known as a secured credit card. So this is where you essentially put down a deposit and you essentially are given a credit card that has that deposit that you put down as your line of credit. So if you put down $500, that gives you a line of credit of $500. The nice thing about these is that these are still reported to the credit bureaus. And normally within 6 to 12 months after opening the card, if you're paying your balance in full and showing that you're responsibly managing that line of credit, you can then get your deposit back and convert it to an unsecured credit card where you just have that line of credit, and you can then start continuing to build your score over time.
I don't know if you and I had this conversation last time or not, but I know at one point before the financial meltdown, they were sending credit cards out to everybody, and I think people were presuming, well, if they send me this credit card with a $5,000 limit, I can run it up because I can afford it. Somebody's watching over this. Unfortunately, nobody's watching. Nobody's watching over anything. Are they still sending credit cards out like that?
So it's probably not as bad as it was, but I still, and part of this is probably because I'm very active with pretty much all of the banks with my network of credit cards. I do still get, just yesterday, I got two solicitations in the mail. One was for me from Discover. One was for my wife from Citibank. Mm-hmm. So they are definitely still sending these out. The big thing I would say, though, is any of the paid marketing materials you're getting in the mail, pressure test that information online, because you may find that there are better offers from these different banks than the ones that you are getting solicited for in the mail. And again, just because someone says, hey, we think you are pre-approved for a $10,000 credit limit, that still is not a license to spend $10,000 in a month, unless your income that you're taking in every month is $20,000 a month, then you can easily pay that balance in full and on time, because credit card lines are not free money. I really cannot emphasize that enough.
You know why I mentioned that, Nick, how somebody could be so idiotic as to think that just because I got this credit card, that means somebody's watching it and I must be able to spend $5,000 and load it up. You know how I know that? Because I did it. That's why. As a young man, I made that very bad mistake, and I try to get that across. Somebody texted and said, I'd like to know if it's best to try to make arrangements with my credit card companies to go through one of those agencies that consolidate everything for you. My income has changed drastically in the last year. I can't keep paying just interest every month.
Yeah, I would say any of the debt relief companies that are out there, it's definitely worth having a conversation to see what they are able to do. One of the other nice things as well is there are a number of options for balance transfer credit cards. These aren't going to give you rewards necessarily, but instead they will allow you in many cases to move an existing balance for a one-time fee to a new card, and then you can actually pay, they typically give you a period of interest-free 0% APR to pay down that balance, where instead of just paying interest, you're paying the balance and it's going towards the principal. Now, couple of important notes there. Number one, there is a fee associated with it. It's typically $5 to 3%, but it does vary. And you can't do that within a bank where you already have a balance. So if you're already sitting with a balance with Chase, for example, you can't open a balance transfer card with Chase and then move that balance because it's still within the same issuer network. But a balance transfer credit card is definitely something that could work there, but also having a conversation with some of those debt consolidation companies to really see what they're able to do, because at the end of the day, credit card companies, they want you to pay it back. They don't want you to default and just simply never pay it back. So if they can work out a deal to get you to pay some of it back or give you an extended payment timeline with a lower interest, they're going to work with some of these companies to try to give you a pathway to doing so. And that can also then help your credit in the long run.
Somebody wants to know about green light cards for kids and if they build credit. I don't know anything about a green light card. What is that?
Yeah, so there are a number of cards that have popped up to really help the younger individuals build credit. I've not personally investigated the green light. I know we have a couple of our team members here at the Points Guy who have, but really there are a number of different products out there that allow you to help build credit and build financial responsibility. And this is one of the real important things. You talked about your experience with running up debt. I've talked to a lot of friends, a lot of family members who simply didn't know otherwise. They were not given the education that they needed to really be financially literate when it came to managing their credit cards and budgeting and everything like that. So regardless of whether you're looking at a green light card or adding your kid as an authorized user, the best thing that you can do as a parent is to teach your kid how to responsibly manage their money. If they are paying their rent and they are, you know, paying their utilities when they first get out of college, and they only have a few hundred dollars left of disposable income, it's going to be very hard for them to go and spend $3,000 on a concert ticket that they really, really want to go to. So that's the most important thing, is really teaching your kid about budgeting and financially managing their money, regardless of what product you're using to do that when they're younger.
Somebody texted in, is it sound advice to say never charge anything on a credit card that you can't pay in 30 days, that you can't clear the balance out every month?
Absolutely. Spending within your means is one of the most important things. The only caveat I would give there is if you do have a huge purchase coming up, you know that there's going to be something that you can't afford. There are a number of credit card offerings that do offer you a period of interest-free. Sometimes it's 0% APR, which basically means you don't have to pay that balance off at all until the end of that period. But of course, if you don't, then you're all of a sudden going to be nailed with interest. I actually took advantage of this. My dog, my beloved child, my first child, my canine child, had some major, major medical surgery at the beginning of last year. We're talking about, you know, low five figures worth of surgery. That was not something that my wife and I had sitting in our bank accounts that we were able to afford. We didn't want to liquidate any of our, you know, investments. So we actually opted for a 0% APR credit card that gave us 15 months to pay off that balance. Mm-hmm. And we made sure we paid the balances each month, kind of debited it down. And by the end of it, we were able to cover the entire thing. So a good rule of thumb is absolutely pay. Do not charge anything to your credit card that you cannot afford to pay off within 30 days when your statement closes. But again, if you do have one of those large expenses, there are ways to help mitigate that with some interest-free financing options.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. Texts are pouring in. Somebody wants to know, if someone's trying to decide on a new credit card, how would you advise them between picking one that's geared towards cash back versus travel rewards? Somebody else wants to know, says, my partner and I take a couple of trips a year and we have good credit. Is there a good card we could get to help make some of these vacations a little cheaper? Somebody else said, my husband and I go to restaurants or order delivery 3 or 4 times a week. What would be our best options? So we'll talk about all that when we come back with Nick Ewan, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy. We'll also talk about what The Points Guy is when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Pardon me, 9:27 now, talking to our friend Nick Ewan, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy. Quickly, Nick, what is The Points Guy?
Yeah, so The Points Guy is a website. We also have a YouTube, a couple YouTube channels and some social media accounts where we cover everything that travelers need to know to maximize their credit card rewards and loyalty programs to travel more for less.
All right, to the text lines we go and help the customers. If someone's trying to decide on a new credit card, how would you advise them on picking between one that's geared towards cash back versus travel rewards?
I think that the big question is how much time you want to invest in learning the ins and outs of the travel rewards ecosystem. I will say I've been doing this for over 20 years now, and the well goes deep when it comes to figuring out all the nuances and the tips and tricks and everything like that. There are a lot of people who are busy and don't have the wherewithal to really dig into all of that. So cashback may simply be the better option, especially if you're not necessarily traveling all the time, because cash can be used for utility bills. It can be used to cover clothing. It can be used to cover groceries. So it does have that additional flexibility. But if you do want the opportunity to maximize your rewards and you are willing to put in some time and energy, a travel card may be a better option for you.
Is there a rule of thumb about how much travel do you do for it to be worth the travel rewards?
I think that's a good rule of thumb. You know, if you're taking, you know, one road trip a year and maybe a flight every 3 or 4 years, a travel rewards card is probably not going to give you enough payoff to go beyond what you would get from a simple cashback card. Remember, there are a lot of cashback, or a handful of cashback cards out there that give you 2% back on every purchase you make with no annual fee. So that you should think of as your baseline. If I can get more value than that by leveraging a travel rewards card that maybe gives me bonus points in specific categories that I know I spend a lot in, then that could be a good option. But if you are thinking 2% back on everything I purchase, that I can use that cash for anything, that sounds pretty good, and that may be a better option for you.
So when it comes to cards that you pay for, like American Express, or what else do you pay for?
It depends. Pretty much every issuer has cards that run the gamut of $0 up to $400, $500, $600, $700 per year. So there's a huge range of products out there.
So I guess what I'm asking is, you know, because you and I had this conversation last time, I always wanted American Express Platinum, but I don't really travel, and I'm not going to pay $795 a year or whatever it is. Unless you do travel, are those paid cards worth it?
It really depends, and this is where it's so important, especially in recent weeks, months, years, we've seen these annual fees really grow higher and higher and higher. So previously, $450 was kind of the upper bound of where these cards are. We now have a personal credit card out there that has a $795 annual fee, and that's the Chase Sapphire Reserve. Now, I am a Chase Sapphire Reserve card holder, and it is worth it to me as someone who travels frequently. So it's really important, regardless of whether a card charges a $95 annual fee or a $795 annual fee, you've got to crunch the numbers and identify the benefits that it offers and actually put a value on that, a real dollar value that you think you are getting out of each one of those benefits. And then once you've done that, tally up the value of the benefits, compare it to the annual fee. The benefits outweigh the annual fee, then it's worth keeping. If they don't, then you might want to consider downgrading it.
And you're talking about now air travel, right? Not road travel.
It really depends, because there are some credit cards that offer bonus points on gas purchases and give you, you know, a variety of other benefits as well. In addition to the increasing annual fees, another trend that we've seen over the last several years has been this kind of increasing push into non-travel benefits. So even the American Express Platinum card, obviously, it's kind of the king for premium travel, or has been the longest running premium travel card out there. But it has a ton of non-travel perks you can get on the card right now, like $20 a month towards select digital entertainment providers like the New York Times and Hulu. Those are things that can really put money back in your pocket if you already subscribe to these platforms, and adding this card to your wallet can actually get you money back. So yes, these are travel cards, but they've really tried to expand their kind of coverage into these lifestyle non-travel areas. So that's really where you have to look and say, how often am I going to be using these benefits, whether it's lounge access in an airport, whether it's the streaming benefits, whether it's hotel credits or elite status, and really identify, is this worth it for me in my personal unique situation?
But how would you go about assigning a dollar value to that?
So some of them are pretty simple. The digital entertainment credit, for example, on the Amex Platinum, that's $20 a month. Relatively simple. If you're already paying for one of these platforms, that is going to be $20 a month back in your pockets. So that's $240 in a year. So right there, that's a good chunk of your annual fee. Mm-hmm. Now, something like lounge access, that's a lot harder to put a true value on. So that's where it does become a little bit more subjective. Now, if you're the type of person who's like, you know what, I'm rarely in an airport, and even when I am, I'm trying to time it where I don't have to spend any extra time in the airport. I want to drop my bags and get to the plane and walk right on. Then lounge access, you may want to assign a $0 value to that. Mm-hmm. It's really up to your own specific circumstance, but really going through that exercise, even putting it down on paper to really detail out, this is the quantifiable value I'm getting from this card, can really help you in identifying, is this worth it to me? And you may find out that it's not.
We've gotten a couple of texts from people planning trips out of the country. Can you talk about foreign transaction fees and how people can kind of avoid them?
Yeah, for sure. So this is a really key thing, and a lot of people don't necessarily realize. One of the great things is that cards like Visa and MasterCard, even American Express now, are accepted almost anywhere that you go. Obviously, there are exceptions. There are some small businesses that are going to be cash only. But one of the big things that people don't necessarily realize is just because your card is accepted, that doesn't mean it's accepted with no fee. So there are a lot of cards, especially the no annual fee ones, that do impose, typically it's 2.7 to 3% for every single transaction that you make outside of the country. So a simple way to avoid those is to get a card that waives those annual fees. And there are a number of them out there. Most of them do have annual fees, but there are a few. Capital One in particular is known for having cards that don't charge foreign transaction fees and also have no annual fee. So I know some readers here at the Points Guy who have their cards that they love that they use every day in the U.S., but they actually keep a separate one that they use when they travel outside the country because it waives those foreign transaction fees. So really, even if you're just traveling outside of the country once a year, once every other year, a great tip is to have a card that's going to save you on those transaction fees.
This is an interesting text. Somebody wants to know if the credit cards that charge fees are more or less picky when it comes to credit scores.
That's a great question. So let me start by saying, generally speaking, any card that offers any kind of rewards, whether it's cash back, whether it's airline miles, whether it's travel points, are generally going to have relatively high requirements to get approved for them. Typically, you're looking for very good, if not excellent, credit. You can get approved in maybe the low 600s, but generally you'll be in you need to be in the 700s, if not in the 800s, to really maximize your approval odds. So rewards cards in general tend to be the ones that have those higher approval requirements. The difference in the annual fees typically isn't a huge thing. Generally, all rewards cards in general. But bear in mind, too, that just because you have a high credit score doesn't mean you're guaranteed to get approved. We've seen people with credit scores of 810, 820, 830. I mean, that's approaching a perfect credit score. Still get rejected for cards because there's something else in their credit history, or maybe they've already gotten too many new cards, or they have too much credit that has been extended to them. So there are a number of other factors that go into it beyond just that numerical number. So again, you want to try to increase that score as much as possible to maximize your odds of getting approved.
Somebody texted in and said, my husband and I, let me find this here, go to restaurants 3 or 4 times a week and get takeouts. What would be the best card for us?
There are a lot of options out there. Obviously, you know, the kind of lifestyle rewards, that's become an increasingly important thing, especially to the younger generation. So there are many cards out there that offer bonus points on dining purchases, including takeout services. One of our favorites here at the Points Guy is the Chase Sapphire Preferred Cards. That'll give you 3 points per dollar you spend at every restaurant. The American Express Gold Card is another one that offers 4 points per dollar at restaurants across the world. Those cards do come with annual fees, so it's important to keep that in mind. But this is part of when it comes to choosing your next card. I love this question because it shows they're already thinking about, how should I be choosing my next card? Looking at where you're spending your money can be a real critical aspect of that. If you're a big family, you don't really travel a ton, but you have huge grocery bills, mm-hmm. Look for a card that's going to give you bonus points or extra cash back at your grocery store. If you dine out a lot, like this couple that just wrote in, look for a card that gives you bonus points on restaurants or bonus points on those delivery or takeout services. So really matching your spending to the cards, that's going to be a key way to help really boost the rewards that you're taking home.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back. Texts are pouring in, 504-260-1870. We're talking to our friend Nick Ewan, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy, about credit card rewards. If you're not paying attention to it, you could be missing out on benefits to help you travel for less. I charge everything on a credit card, paid off 30 days, and use the points when I get enough to use as payment toward the card for the things that I charged, and that helps debt. We'll take a break, come back. Right now, time for traffic on WWL. Especially when we're talking to Nick Ewan, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy. Nick, somebody texted in and said, my husband and I don't travel per se, but each weekend we travel to some of the finer restaurants in the city of New Orleans. And I guess the tab, they say, goes to like 250 plus every weekend. So is there a credit card that really would cater to that?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of good options. Number one would be just a general card that offers bonus points on dining, regardless of what restaurant you choose. The other thing I would potentially look at is American Express has a partnership with Resy, the booking platform, R-E-S-Y. If any of those nicer restaurants that they're going to on a regular basis are on the Resy platform, there are a couple of cards that offer credits in different amounts and different timelines. So I mentioned before the American Express Gold Card that gives you 4 points per dollar spent at all of your restaurants. But then you also do get every 6 months, you basically get $50 off a restaurant on the Resy platform. So I always make sure to try to go to one of those restaurants with my wife and daughter at least every 6 months to be able to enjoy a nice meal, but then also get $50 off the tab when the card is charged. So there are definitely some interesting ones to look at there.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Somebody else texted in here. Let me scroll because I got a lot of them and I want to take them in the order that they came in. Credit card rewards can be complicated if somebody has the time to learn those ins and outs, as you have said, what are some of the best travel cards for them? Alternatively, if somebody just wants a simple, easy-to-understand travel card, what are those options?
Yeah, so I think simple, easy-to-understand would be a card like the Chase Sapphire Preferred or the Capital One Venture card. Those are both really great, relatively straightforward options. They come at relatively low annual fees. The nice thing, though, is that if you are earning points in either one of those programs, they do have the ability later on for you to start building your prowess. So if you're like, look, I just want simple, go with one of those cards for now, but maybe 2-3 years down the road, you're like, all right, I'm pretty comfortable with this card now. I want to do more. They give you the option to do that because they do have, they partner with a number of airlines and hotels, and they allow you to convert your points that you earn or the miles that you earn on the Capital One Venture card directly to these airline and hotel loyalty programs. That's where you can really start to maximize those rewards. So I view those cards as great, you know, like starter cards that give you the runway or the ramp to really grow your experience in the future.
So somebody texts in and says, in general, is it beneficial to constantly be changing credit cards and chasing benefits, or is it generally better to stick with the same cards?
This, again, I will answer with my go-to, which is it depends. I've talked with a lot of our readers here at The Points Guy, a lot of my friends and family members who are like, I cannot manage more than one or two credit cards. Be honest with yourself. If you can't think through, I need to use this credit card for this purchase, and then this credit card gives me this benefit, and then this card gives me this perk, go simple. Go for a card that's going to give you a solid return, Capital One Venture card, Chase Sapphire Preferred, maybe a 2% cash back credit card. Changing credit cards a lot can be good if you're jumping on really good limited time bonus offers, or there are new perks that get added to a card that you're like, huh, that really fits my lifestyle. I want to go ahead and add that to your wallet. The big thing is that you don't want to be churning cards too quickly. If you're constantly opening cards and then closing them or opening them and downgrading them, a credit card issuer may say, you know what, this person is not really a good long-term value for us. We are going to go ahead and restrict the number of approvals that we're going to give them. Now, there are ways to play the game where you do have multiple cards. But again, you have to be honest with, do you have the time to really make sure that you understand your entire wallet and can really maximize more than one or more than a handful of cards at the same time?
So my text in, I got an Amex Blue Cash Preferred this month. I guess that's a credit card. I get $120 a year for Disney Plus bundle I was already subscribed to. I get 6% back on other streaming services, so I just paid $91 for YouTube TV and got $5 back from that. And then they said it's cost $95 a year, but they waived the fee for the first year, a sign-up bonus of $250 when I spent $3,000 the first 6 months, which will be easy to do. My eyes glazed over halfway through that text, Nick, and I'm thinking I'm just going to charge it every 30 days, use the points to pay off the card. Thoughts?
Yeah. Again, this is where it's knowing who you are and what you want to focus on. A card like that can be really great, and you can really make the math work to justify that $95 annual fee. But you know what? There's also a no annual fee version of that card. It's called the Blue Cash Everyday. slightly lower earning rates, slightly different collection of perks. But that's another one where you're like, you know what? I don't even have to worry about paying the annual fee. And it's going to be a little bit easier to maximize that particular card. So again, just knowing how you want to focus and where you want to invest your energy. A lot of people say, forget it. It's simple. I just want simple. The big thing is do not say, forget it. I'm not going to play the game at all because you are missing out. Again, think of the baseline as a no annual fee credit card that gives you 2% back on everything you buy. If you're not playing that game and managing your credit responsibly, you're missing out on that reward. That's as simple as it gets.
So somebody texted in and said, to wrap it all up, is there any rule of thumb that would tell you by income level what's the best card for you to have, or it's all about what you spend the money on?
Yeah, really the income level doesn't really come into like which card is going to be best for you. Mm-hmm. The income level would just indicate how much you are able to spend on a given card in a given month to be able to pay it off in full. So really it's just about identifying the benefits that are really going to be most important to you and then picking the card that's going to match the spending habits as well as what you want to do. If you want to travel, a travel rewards card can be great. If you just want simple cash back to go towards your everyday expenses, then a cashback card is going to be a terrific fit.
I'm getting a lot of texts about the 3 and 4% that merchants charge because they're being charged by the credit card company if it outweighs the benefits that you get. But that's all relative, right? I mean, it all depends on your situation.
Yeah, of course. So there are a number of merchants that are imposing these costs or otherwise positioning it as, you know, a cash discount. So again, that's where you need to decide, is that going to be worth incurring that extra fee? If you're using a card that's just a 1% cash back card or maybe 1 point for every dollar you spend at a particular store, then that probably isn't going to be worth it because the way you have to think about it is this 1 point that I'm going to earn be worth more than 3 cents when I go to use those rewards? In many cases, the answer is no.
The hour flies by too quickly. Nick Ewan, Senior Editorial Director at The Points Guy. It's thepointsguy.com, Nick.
Yep, thepointsguy.com. You can follow us on all the major social media platforms at The Points Guy.
Very valuable information. Thank you, Nick. We'll take a break, 9:54, find out what Newell's got for us when we come back on WWL.